This is Paul Jindrzejczyk for Sunday Morning Town Square. I'm joined in studio by Brandon Dillon. He's the state representative for the 75th District of Grand Rapids. How are you doing today, Brandon?
I'm great, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So everyone has their own path into politics and public service. You went to Aquinas here in Northeastern in Boston for political science. Many don't pursue politics till maybe a little bit later in life. What attracted you to public service and politics at such a young age?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think probably just having a big, loud political family.
Okay.
I'm one of five. My dad is one of four. My grandfather was one of nine, I believe. And we're a pretty close family, but also pretty diverse politically and have strong opinions. And I think just growing up, watching my family discuss issues of the day and then seeing people that I admired go into public service, both locally and people that I thought nationally were people I'd like to aspire to be like, was really what got me interested in it. And then when I was at Aquinas, had a great political science professor, Dr. Glenn Barkin, who really got me interested in thinking about this. And after I graduated from Aquinas, I went and worked a few odd jobs here and there, decided I probably needed to go back to school a little bit, and went to Northeastern. And then Boston's a great place for politics. If you're interested in it, it's a great place to be. And fortunately, after I got finished my degree there, I was hired for a political consulting firm and actually was working for a gentleman who had a couple years prior been the chief of staff to Joe Kennedy. So and he was really passionate about it. So you know, I don't know what exactly sparked it, but it's always just been something I like to debate, I like to argue, but I also like to talk to people that have different opinions than me, because I think you learn a lot.
What were some of the roles that your family members held politically?
None. None of my family's ever been elected. I do have my grandfather's from Canada, and he has brothers and nephews who are involved politically with the labor movement there. But in terms of any of my family members actually being elected, I'm the first one I know of outside of maybe a student council president here or there somewhere.
So it's just impassioned political discussion around the dinner table.
That's it. Absolutely.
But you said you like to argue. What is it about arguing?
Well, you know, I think other people who might watch from the outside think it's arguing. I like to actually have a pretty deep discussion with people. Sometimes it gets a little loud, especially if you know somebody well. But I think you actually find out a lot about where people are coming from. I think too often in politics or just in the media today, it's a very you hear very surface bits of somebody's political view or why they want to sell you a product. And if you can actually drill down and talk to somebody, even if you differ pretty vehemently politically on a few issues, you might find some areas of commonality. And I think it's actually better for our political system, our society, when we have loud public debates where we actually really find out what people are thinking. Because, you know, sometimes when people are polite and don't actually challenge people about why they think something, you really don't learn anything. And I think it's I think it's really important for our system. I think it can degenerate into gridlock and kind of partisan sniping. That's that's what we don't want. But having a good, thorough, healthy debate and respecting that other people may have totally different opinions than you, but actually might believe them just as strongly as you do, I think is healthy. And that's what my family, we had a lot of that. We argued a lot. But at the end of the day, I think we all probably want the same thing for our family, our country. Absolutely.
So what was it that you envisioned and attracted you early on to politics? And what was it that you found it to be? Was the reality a little bit different once you got into the mix of things?
Yeah, well, I had worked on staff in the legislature for the 8 years prior to being elected to the state house. I'd worked on Senate staff and I'd worked on campaigns before. So I've been surrounded by people who'd been elected and part of the political process. But, you know, I think being elected locally at the county level was really important for me to have that grounding and to understand how decisions in Lansing or in Washington impact people immediately at home. And I, you know, I really had a great time in the county commission. I enjoyed the issues that we dealt with. One of the issues I was most proud of was the farmland preservation issue that we were able to fund for the first time. Continues to be a struggle locally. But that's one of those things where you actually can see people face to face and see that the votes that you had have a direct impact on them, whether positively or negatively, almost immediately. And I think one of the good things about term limits is you've got a lot of people in the state legislature with that local government experience. Now, it doesn't always translate into decisions that I would agree with, or maybe certain members of the public do. But despite you know, losing some of that institutional memory, you do get people who have a chance to come through the political system at the local level, get an idea for how their decisions impact people, and then hopefully move up in a positive way.
Sure. Now, you mentioned some of your family members kind of ignited your interest in politics, but who are some of the mentors who helped meld you?
Yeah, it's a good question. Locally, you know, a good mentor and a friend of mine is Steve Pesca, who just recently ran for Congress, was a member of the legislature back in the late 90s, had been a county commissioner, was also a judge, and I think actually exemplifies really the best in public service, no matter what political party you come from. Somebody who's came from a family that had been very successful, that had immigrated here, but never took that for granted and always was willing to give back. I think that's really the most important thing, whether you're somebody like Steve or people that, you know, I've admired from afar nationally, political figures. But, you know, Steve, I think, has been the most important mentor for me and somebody who really exemplifies, I think, the ability to listen to all sides. He was never a strident partisan figure, had some very has some very core beliefs, but also understands that there's other people out there who have good ideas, too. Sure. Nobody has all the answers. So
true.
Steve's been good. So, you know, I've had good friends here at the city commission level over the years that I've worked closely with. Rosalind Bliss currently, who's, I think, a great city commissioner. You know, but just a lot of different people that I've had a chance. School board members who I've, and candidates who haven't even won that have been great candidates.
Right.
But unfortunately, because of the year or the office they're running for, weren't able to make it. But those kind of people inspire me all the time.
Well, you were saying with Steve, you know, he kind of taught you to be, you know, less partisan, and it seems like it's gotten very, very heated within the last few years. Why is that, and what needs to happen for the gridlock to stop, whether it's in Lansing or whether it's in D.C., and, you know, folks to kind of reach across the aisle and say, hey, you know, we need to work on things together?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons for it. And I think, I mean, it's probably ironic. There's a lot of people who probably think of me as more partisan than some other public officials around here. But, you know, I'm vocal and passionate about the things I believe in, but I also do have a healthy respect for other people and try to work with people at all times. I would never dismiss somebody's ideas just because they're different than mine or because they come from a different place.
Sure.
So I think the difference sometimes is in temperament and how you approach the job. But I've always been deeply aware, especially coming from an area like Grand Rapids, where people from all walks of life have come together outside of politics to do some really positive things for our city and our region, that it really takes different, a variety of people and that diversity to actually come up with good decisions. But, you know, why it's so partisan, I think there's a lot of reasons. I think the media has become more decentralized in a way. So people, with the explosion of cable media, the internet, people are able to choose their own venues for the kind of news sites that they want to gather news from. And oftentimes, unfortunately, we choose to get our news from areas that reinforce our currently held beliefs. Sometimes that's good. There's access to more information, but sometimes we do choose to narrow where we get that from. I think, you know, we put a lot of the blame on people that are elected and in the political system, but, you know, our elected officials are usually representing their constituents back home and are a reflection of the districts that they come from. And I think part of that has to do with the way we draw district lines. We draw them very aggressively to favor one party on both sides so that they're the only real elections you have are in primaries. In the state house in Michigan, there's 110 seats. Every 2 years, there's probably 15 to 20 seats, maybe 25 that are competitive. The rest of them are all determined by the time the primary's over.
Okay.
So it's a disincentive for people to come together because they're afraid that they might be punished by either the left wing of their party on a Democratic side or the right wing of their party on a Republican side. But, you know, ultimately the responsibility lies with those who are elected to try to bridge that divide and come together.
Sure.
But it has, if I had the answer, I think somebody else would have had the answer first. But it's a difficult time, and I think there's a lot of contributing factors, but it's up to people, I think, in public leadership and also those constituents to hold them accountable and then reward people when they do take those risks and reach across the aisle.
And I mean, your view is going to be unique because you're actually there and in it
right.
in Lansing.
Yeah. And I, you know, for instance, you know, I represent a district now in Grand Rapids that's got a 75% Democratic base. Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically, the only challenge I'm going to face is in a Democratic primary. Now, that doesn't mean I look at those issues and only in terms of how Democrats would see them. I don't. I try to look at them in terms of how it's going to affect not just my constituents, but constituents in and around Grand Rapids.
Sure.
But there's many districts like that, and we can't forget that the structure of the system influences the decisions that are made by people in that system.
Okay.
So we can't just always blame the people, even though there's a lot of blame to go around. I think we need to look at the structure of how we draw districts, how we conduct elections, mm-hmm. In not just in Michigan, but across the country. And also, you know, encouraging people to reach outside their own comfort zone and start talking and gathering information from sites and news sources that might be different from what they're used to.
Sure. Now, you've been making your way through your first term in Lansing. What are some of the things that you've had on your punch list that you've wanted to get accomplished?
Well, there's a lot that I've wanted to get accomplished. And I can tell you, you know, being one of 110 members of the House and also 38 senators, you know, it's everybody. Everybody has an agenda. Everybody wants to do things. I think generally, whether I disagree with somebody, they all are really working hard to try to do what they think's best for their constituents.
Right.
But you can't do everything on your own, and partisanship does play a role in your effectiveness or ability to get everything you want done. Republicans have control of the legislature, the governor's office, mm-hmm. pretty much every statewide office, and it makes it more difficult as a Democrat to get all the things I'd like to get done. But it hasn't stopped me from working on the Appropriations Committee mm-hmm. to try to restore funding and protect funding for things that I think are important for Grand Rapids. One of the things I was most proud of was getting the $300,000 for Grand Rapids, but $600,000 total appropriation for the GRAPSET program, which is the pre-college engineering program for young oftentimes disadvantaged and underprivileged students in Grand Rapids to be able to get that, go on to college. We've had 6 Gates scholars. We've had 99% graduation rate out of the program. The governor had vetoed at one time. I worked with Senator Hildebrand and others to get that money back, okay. Which I think is a really good investment for kids that really show mm-hmm. promise to be able to go into careers that are going to be high paying and then give back to their community. I've tried to really focus my efforts on protecting education funding. Mm-hmm. We've had some real deep cuts in the last few years, and I'm mm-hmm. hopeful this year as a member of the Appropriations Committee to be able to work and restore some of the money that Grand Rapids Public Schools has right. lost for bilingual education, mm-hmm. Small class size grants, which I think will help supplement and reward the hard work that Superintendent Neal and the school board and others have done to really try to get through some difficult times. So education funding, mm-hmm. trying to find ways to improve small businesses and helping entrepreneurs in Grand Rapids through some different things we could do with the MEDC and trying to work through some of the good ideas that are out there are my priorities for the next term as well.
Sure. And you gave a very passionate speech from the floor about the right to work legislation that ultimately ended up passing in the lame duck session. But for those who may not be up to speed on it, what does the passage mean for Michigan, and what are the short-term and long-term effects?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you're probably going to get two different answers from depending on what side of the debate you sit on. But for me, mm-hmm. Since you asked me, I'll tell you what I think.
Yes.
You know, I was obviously not a supporter of right to work. I did not think it's the right way to go for Michigan. I think it's going to be the governor for over 2 years as a candidate, and also as the governor had said that this was an issue that was not on his agenda. It was too divisive. It was not going to help move the state of Michigan forward. At the 11th hour in the lame duck session, the governor changed his mind and decided to support passing right to work in Michigan. And, you know, I believe that in order for Michigan to be successful economically, we need a lot of things. We need a highly trained workforce. We need a strong education system. We certainly need a competitive tax and regulatory environment for businesses to be able to reward and not stifle people. But I don't think the path to prosperity in Michigan should be from the top down. I believe it should be from the middle out and mm-hmm. making sure we have good paying jobs with benefits and allowing workers to have a voice in the workplace, I think is critical to that effort. I think it's one of the reasons Michigan became the engine of the middle class during the middle of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. Certainly, organized labor is not without fault for some of the economic problems we've had, particularly with some of the excesses in the 70s and 80s, and even in the public sector, where being a little bit slower to realize that we need to make some cutbacks. But I don't think that making it harder for unions to be able to have a voice for their workers in the workplace is going to be beneficial for average workers across the board. Right-to-work states have lower per capita incomes. They have lower illiteracy rates. They have lower rates of people with health insurance. And I think, you know, any argument that this is somehow going to be great for competitiveness in Michigan is not borne out by the facts. Even a state like Indiana that the governor tried to use as his last-minute explanation for pursuing right-to-work, not any of the jobs that have gone to Indiana since they passed a right-to-work, none of the CEOs of those companies will cite right-to-work as the reason they went there. Okay. They had made those decisions prior to the legislature passing those, and part of them, many of them made the decision based on tax incentives that the state of Indiana offered those businesses. Many of those tax incentives Michigan got rid of in our budget process last year.
Okay.